When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Good morning and welcome to episode 97 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name's Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. John, it is day two of the draft right now. We're recording before day two, after day one. Brian Thomas Jr. is a Jaguar. But before we go over our immediate takeaways on Thomas Jr., we're going to go over Jacksonville's process trading back from the 17th overall pick to the 23rd overall pick with Minnesota. So, I mean, let's just break down who was available, I guess. The fact that six quarterbacks went in the first 12 picks was bonkers.
It's jumped the shark, right? Like, nobody's going to fight like the idea of a quarterback's the most important position in football, but come on, man. Like, Bo Nix is going like in the second and third round in most draft classes, right?
For sure. I feel like for the Broncos, they didn't have a second round pick, so I think they kind of thought, oh, if we're going to take a quarterback, it kind of has to be now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know how to explain what the Falcons did. That was the most bizarre draft pick I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, me too. The general like awe around the media room yesterday as we were all following. Yeah. It was good stuff. I was glad you were in the media room yesterday, pal.
It was a fun time. The first half was a lot of fun because, like, I don't know. I was working, but I don't know. We were still kind of palling around or whatever. But then as soon as they made the pick, it was just right to work. And then it was late by that point. So it's been a week. It's been a month. It's been a year.
The beat had it made like during like the Gus Bradley era, right? Like they were out of there like 9:30, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, they were picking top five every year, man. Right? Picking in the 20s, man. We're fighting for our lives. So yeah, you know, 12, like you said, 12 quarterbacks. It felt like 12 quarterbacks. Six quarterbacks in the first 12 picks. Mm-hmm. The first defensive player was taken at pick 15 by the Colts. The second one was taken at 16. It doubled the record for offensive players pick consecutively to start a draft. The previous record was 7 in a row in 2021. Yesterday it was 14 in a row, which is like, does it say more about the league and where and like its direction or the draft class? Because it was wild to me, dude. I mean, there are good defenders in this class. There's no Garrett. There's no Sauce Gardner. I don't even think there's like a Pat Surtain, but there's good defensive players in this class.
Yeah, not to sit on the fence, but my answer would be both, or it's both where the league is going and the class. But if I had to say one, it would definitely be the class, because I think for the most case, like, I know Byron Murphy's a really good defensive tackle, but he's not, I don't know, he's a little short, so he's not like an elite tackle prospect. Yeah. You just talked about how there's not really an elite cornerback prospect. There's arguably not an elite edge prospect, since we saw Dallas Turner fall, and like, I think Lachey's really good, but there's definitely some medical concerns with him.
When the Jags traded down, I had people, the primary people that were upset mentioned a combination of Chop Robinson, Dallas Turner, and Jared Verse, not picking any of them. I get it to an extent, but I'm like, dude, you can't convince me you're going to lose sleep over not being able to pick Chop Robinson. And like Dallas Turner, like, I think we both agree he's a good football player, but is he one that you just can't pass on? No, I mean, 16 teams pass on. Normally, edge two goes much higher. I mean, edge one went number 15, so nobody thinks his edge class. Like, if there's a good edge defender, he's not getting out of the top 10. Like, if there's a great one, you know.
For sure.
I'll say it. We got balky bowled. Trent read that room like a book. Did he not? I credit where he's given due. I think the immediate reaction by fans So they traded down from 17 to 23, and they picked up a late fifth rounder. It's technically Kansas City's fifth rounder, so it's like at the very end. It's the most irrelevant piece of the trade. 2025 third rounder and a 2025 fourth rounder. So they can essentially leave this weekend with four top 100 picks next year without really having to do, you know, anything for it. I think that picking up future picks is so important, and you're seeing it more and more in like player trades now, that you can use those picks, you know, to leverage teams, whether it's trying to acquire a player at the trade deadline, whether it's trying to move up like on day two. Like having that 2025 fourth rounder, I'd imagine, is extremely valuable if they want to make a move on like day two or something like that, you know? So I think it was smart to move back and acquire, but I know the immediate reaction was there was a good amount of people upset. I thought it was a great process, personally.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think we talked about how like it would have been a bad idea for the Jaguars to like convince themselves there was a non-quarterback prospect that was so good they had to trade up for. Like more so when we were talking about Quinion Mitchell and Terry. Not Malik Nabers. That's kind of like a different story because he was just so expensive. But yeah, that's what the Vikings ended up doing. Like they kind of just had such a high grade on Turner, I guess, that they thought it was worth going up. And so the board, like the way that those six quarterbacks and so many offensive players definitely helped out the Jaguars, but Balky certainly took advantage of it.
Yeah, because I mean, so take out Latu, take out Murphy. They were probably unlikely to take either of those players to begin with, right? Like I can't imagine they were going to take an edge to begin with. And like you mentioned, Murphy doesn't really fit like the prototype, which means like it's not shocking that he was drafted at 16.
Yeah, Trent has talked a couple of times about like how he likes his first round picks to like quote unquote check all the boxes. And so I think Murphy checked a lot of boxes, but maybe not all the boxes.
Yeah, so it basically felt like they had like their pick of whatever they wanted at 17. You know, they could have took the top cornerback. They could have taken Brian Thomas at 17. They could have taken, what was it? I think five offensive linemen went in the 20s or from like 19 to the 20s. And Fatanu, Barton, Guyton, Morgan. For some reason, I'm counting Fuaga in there, even though he was already off the board in the Jags pick. There was only four, but well, nonetheless.
Mims, that's five.
Yeah, okay, there we go. Yeah, I knew there was somebody. So they had basically their choice of a ton of offensive linemen, any corners, any receivers. I mean, it's what you and I were saying. You're like, there's no reason to have overconfidence when if you like five or six players in the same relative ballpark, you can move down, pick up picks, and one of those players is still going to be there. And it's pretty obvious that's what happened here, right? If Thomas had been selected, and I know Balky said last night that a part of the trade was they didn't think the teams picking between 17 and 23 were going to take a receiver. No receivers went off the board. You know, Thomas kind of started a receiver run with Worthy and Pearsall going after him. So Balky affecting the receiver market yet again.
That was a great bet. Man, that would definitely have been the surprise of the night, I think, if Atlanta hadn't Atlanted. But yeah, I think the picks getting back in the future is good for the Jaguars because, like you said, like they can use that in a veteran trade, or I mean, they'll just have it next year, which is better for a team like the Jaguars, which like has their GM has stability, and so like he's actually going to be able to use those future picks. Like a team like the Patriots or someone that has a new GM, and so they're just trying to like win now in order to keep their job. They might be more willing to like, I don't know, or like put more stock into current picks. But for the Jags, like Balky's going to be around for a minute, so it's not a bad process for them to get the future picks.
And the immediate reaction from so many people was one of two things. It was, he can't make picks after the first round. Why are you giving him more picks? And we did this last year and see what happened. I would counter that with last year, having so many picks, like the fact that they have maybe a couple players from like round five beyond who are worth keeping from last year's class, that's why it was worth it. The fact that there's like three guys with the pulse, like normally you get one of those guys at most. You know, I know Parker Washington isn't going to be a starter or anything. I know Cooper Hodges is just stepped and hasn't played. Obviously, Antonio Johnson will have a big role, but I mean, hitting on those three guys alone, I think, in the last three rounds of a draft is, I think, worth getting more picks. And it's funny, the same fan base that doesn't stop tweeting about Antonio Johnson and how great Antonio Johnson is and how good of a starting safety he's going to be doesn't like trading down, when trading down is the only reason Antonio Johnson is literally on the team. And my second, you know, thing to say to that is, if you think your GM is bad, and I'm not even like disputing his record, because I think I've gone on record about his record several times. Somebody texted me yesterday, you know, saying how it was a wonderful trade, and somebody was like, was it bulky? And I'm like, no, trust me, buddy. No, it wasn't. So I've gone on record several times. But if you think a GM is bad, don't you want him to make more picks instead of fewer picks? Like, it increases the chance that he's right. If he's throwing darts and he's blind, I mean, he has a better chance of getting on the board if you give him more darts. You know, it makes no sense to want less picks if you think your GM is bad. So just its logic on its face doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I think fans just kind of like assume that all first round prospects, or at least like top 10 to 15 prospects, have like a super high floor and are like essentially can't miss guys. So they're like, oh, like just get as many of those guys on our team as possible, because like you're not going to hit anything with the late round picks anyway. But no, like the whole draft is a dartboard. Obviously, there's just a higher success rate of the first round players working out, but like it's certainly not a sure thing either. So just in general, like more throws or more appearances at the plate or whatever you want to use is a good thing.
Yeah, 100%. What was – I'm looking it up now as I'm asking it rhetorically. What was Trent's comment on the question of the night from the always candid Mark Long when he was asked about the trade and if he thinks he's fleecing them in a scenario like that? Trent just smiled and he said, no, I think it was a fair trade. I have a lot of respect for Questy, and he's one of the bright minds in this business when it comes to numbers and analytics and everything else. He's not going to get fleeced. He did a good job. They got the player they wanted, and they gave us what they were willing to give up. It's not about fleecing one another. No one's going to get one over on another one. It's just, what are they willing to give, and are you willing to accept it? It's as simple as that. So he's saying, hey, I like the guy. They've worked together before, you know, in San Francisco. So he's not going to go up there and publicly say he, you know, put him in a locker. But he did. I mean, is it the greatest upset in analytics history in football? Trent Baalke taking Questy to the cleaners? Like, anybody on a spreadsheet ever have predicted that?
Probably not, especially when you look at like the actual trade value. I think there's someone named Anthony Reichert or Richard Reichert probably on Twitter who has like this value chart that shows like basically who won the trade according to four or five different trade value charts. And yeah, Baalke blew him out of the water. It wasn't just like, oh, this is like fairly even. Like, it makes sense for both sides. It was like clearly a win for Jacksonville. So yeah, he definitely put him in the locker.
I know it didn't include any first or second round picks, so it's not sexy, but in my opinion, it's one of the more lopsided draft day trades in a while. So I'm thinking, did they even negotiate that? Or did they just pick up the phone and that's what they're offering? They're like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like people are probably seeing like trade back and they're like, oh, we just got like a fifth rounder. Who cares about that? No, like the compensation was a lot better than that.
When somebody was reading it out in the media room, at first they just said the fifth round pick and didn't mention the future pick. So my first reaction was, oh, come again. For the second year in a row, I think Baalke played the first round really well, just in terms of what I think are the right things to do. Because go ahead and look at what Minnesota gave up to even get 23 in general. So add that into what they gave up to go from 23 to 17. They basically sold next year's draft out of their first-round pick for J.J. McCarthy and Dallas Turner. And if they work out, great. But it's the same thing we talked about, having overconfidence. Everybody's going to say, well, they had conviction, they got their guy. Everybody who's ever traded up for a player has said that. I'm sure the Dolphins said it about Deion Jordan. I'm sure the Jaguars have said it about some terrible player they traded up for. Everybody has conviction. It doesn't mean anything.
Right. Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, I'm with you. Who cares, pal? All right. With that said, we're going to cut for a quick break, and then we're going to be right back with our rapid takes on the Jaguars' newest first-round pick. We'll be right back. There we go. For those watching at home, we had a technical
thing happen.
Yeah, we had the circle of death. We have fun with technology on this podcast.
I think technology has fun with us on this podcast. For sure.
Good point. All right. With that said, now talking about the actual selection, number 23 overall. I'll be honest. I feel like they could have picked anybody sans like Peyton Wilson or like Michael Pratt, the Tulane quarterback or whatever. And yeah. I wouldn't have killed it at this pick. You know, okay, I would have killed like a running back or something like that. But just the value they got from trading down alone in that process, I'm like, whoever you get at the end of the day is mostly gravy, right? Like the only guy who really went like in that range between 17 and 23 who – I mean, we were even thinking was a potential target was who? Quinyon Mitchell, a pick before?
Like maybe Troy Fontana, but not even the same category.
Yeah. Quinyon. Yeah, 100%. So do you think they would have taken Thomas over Quinyon at 17? They say they would have. I don't think you can always take what teams say after the draft because it's crazy how 32 teams all got their guys at every single pick and everything, you know, worked out exactly how they thought it was going to. But I'll be honest, I believe the Jaguars would have taken Thomas at 17. We've said on this podcast before, even though I've been banging the cornerback drum, you know, I've said, I think it was in one of the last two episodes that they had been doing a ton of homework on wide receivers. I perceived that as they were looking to trade up for one of the big three. Balky even more or less said, like, he would have liked to, but it just was too costly unless a guy fell. It was pretty clear unless a guy fell past, like, the Jets, it wasn't going to happen, which you and I basically said. But they were doing a lot of homework on the receiver class, and I personally should have saw that more as Brian Thomas Jr. as a potential option because I'll just openly say it. I have no idea what the hell they look for in wide receivers. It's every addition seems so random to me. Sometimes it's traits. Sometimes it's like technical stuff and route running.
Yeah.
I don't know what they look for in receivers. So I guess when it comes to Thomas, like Balky's a traits guy. I mean, he's the ultimate traits pick at the position, right?
Mm-hmm. So this definitely felt like a Balky pick because like similar to your argument with Quinyon Mitchell being ranked over Terron Arnold, it's like just because he's bigger and faster, which sounds pretty silly, but like it's actually true. And so Brian Thomas is kind of the same way where he's big and fast. And so like Trayvon Walker was the first overall pick. Trevor Lawrence, I mean, I know that he was going to get picked regardless, but he's big and fast. Even like Travis Etienne and Tyson Campbell are pretty traits based. And so I thought like for sure it was a Balky type selection. He's also gotten like a similar jump ball kind of guy in AJ Jenkins, right? When he like his lone other first round receiver in San Francisco. But then today I thought of little nugget, which I meant to tweet out, but then I just forgot about it. The last question from Gene was asking Trent whether he was getting worried about Brian Thomas was still going to be available at 23rd when he traded down. And Trent joked around and he said, I wasn't worried at all, but I had to calm Doug Peterson down. And so everyone laughed. And so I don't know, maybe it was just a joke and that's it, but maybe it was a Doug Peterson guy too. I don't know.
I think so because he has the kind of profile that would attract, you know, a lot of people. You know, like he's a big receiver, ran a 4.3 something, a lot of production last year. Everybody's enamored by the long ball. You know, like deep ball guys all like are always. There's a reason John Ross went top 10, and this guy is obviously not John Ross. He obviously has more to his game than that. It really felt like a referendum on the Calvin Ridley situation, didn't it? It just felt like they were determined one way or another to replace Ridley. Maybe not replace Ridley directly, but add a high upside receiver after losing Ridley. I mean, Trent even conceded last night that they probably don't make that pick. Like, doesn't change their evaluation of Thomas as a player. But as we've said, as the Jaguars said, they, you know, teams pick based on need. And I think it was DeRocco last night, asked him if he would have made that pick if Ridley was still on the roster. He said, no, probably not, which it shows you how teams operate. And I do feel like they just, you know, with all the smoke on, they have checked in on Brandon Ayuk. I feel like that's been, you know, reported to death. They've checked in on T. Higgins and the Cincinnati Bengals. He's not getting moved anytime soon. It feels like they've checked in on every possible veteran receiver. They clearly were hoping to that a receiver would fall, so maybe they could take one of the big three. It didn't happen. Like it was just clear they wanted to replace Ridley in some fashion to me. And I don't know. We got balky balled. It now not as in hindsight. Not as in hindsight. I feel like a dumbass. I feel like it was like
I feel so dumb. I got so cornerback peeled, and I thought like not at bad. 17 for sure they were gonna take. No. I did it to myself too. We both probably like just egg each other on a little bit. But I thought at both 17 and 23, like, I mean, at 17, wasn't sure which one they would take. I thought Arnold, but I wasn't 100% confident. And then at 23, I thought for sure, like, Arnold was going to be the pick. And so I was a little bit shocked, honestly, when it was Brian Thomas Jr. And Goodell called his name just because I was, like, so into the weeds about cornerback being their biggest need. But I think, like, one of the biggest takeaways is that, like, they just must really like the second or third wave of cornerbacks because, like, I think I agree with you that Brian Thomas Jr. would have been the pick at 17 also, even over Quinion Mitchell, who was available, because I think that they wanted to, like, make sure they left with a wide receiver because, like, we saw that they kind of started the receiver run and they were going to be comfortable regardless of whether they picked at 17 or 23 of just, like, kind of coming back in the back end for a corner. So it'll be interesting to see tonight whether, like, they move up for a corner, they take the best available one at 48, or if they even wait another round until 96 overall.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I really missed the forest, you know, for the trees on that one. Definitely got balky balled. And, you know, it makes sense. They got the SEC big, giant receiver who tested amazing and had great production.
I do agree with you now, though, about, like, Quinion being ranked – over Arnold, like among the quarterbacks. Yeah, I'm with you there now. Like now, like one of my general takeaways from like this weekend is just like in the future, like just big and fast athletes is who I'm gonna mock to the Jags, at least in the first round.
I wonder, say the Eagles, I know they just paid both receivers, but say they drafted Brian Thomas and Quinion wasn't picked. You think they pick Quinion there, or do you think they pick like Xavier Worthy or something?
I think they pick Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, I think they might pick Xavier. And all right, so we haven't talked much about Thomas the player. Objectively, I don't know if I would have had him as, you know, I've kind of said my piece on his game before. I'm not really like sold on him right away. I've said I see him more as a late first, early second guy. I will say picking him at 23 and getting draft capital compared to picking him at 17, it's two different worlds, right? Like if you pick him at 17 by the consensus board, he's a reach. If you pick him at 23, I mean, he's a steal by a couple picks. You know?
Yeah.
They got into the better spot for him. So I will say that factors into it. With his game specifically, you know, some of the things, you know, I've seen, I think he can be a good deep threat right away, obviously, because of his size, his second gear, especially when the ball is in the air. And not just that, like his frame and his length. I think that was one thing with Ridley. He didn't have a very wide catch radius. So there weren't a ton of passes that maybe downfield that he would haul in if they weren't, you know, more so on the money. I'm thinking like specifically like maybe that last pass against Tennessee.
Yeah, he could create a lot of separation, but like the ball still had to be kind of on his chest in order for him to get it. But I can't really remember any like crazy adjustments he made. He definitely made a couple like nice sideline catches. I feel like he made the one-handed one or something in the preseason in the corner of the end zone. But I don't know, even still, like, those were, like tippy-toe catches for anywhere inside of the field. Other than that, I agree. Like, the frame was something that was kind of missing last year.
100%. And he gives them, like, a back shoulder guy and a go-route guy that he's never really had. I know people are going to say Marvin Jones. I'm not going to count that, okay? Like, maybe Marvin Jones, like, a few years previously. But Marvin Jones just – he wasn't that same kind of dude. In general,
yeah, like if he had Marvin Jones in Marvin Jones's prime, then it'd be acceptable.
Exactly. I mean, this is his fourth career. He's never had a deep threat really his entire career. He played with DJ Chark for like four games. The next year, Zay Jones and Marvin Jones are the outside receivers, and then last year, Calvin Ridley was kind of used as the deep threat, and I do think he can factor in as a vertical guy just because he threatens defenses with his speed. And we obviously saw them connect on some bombs, but I think Ridley is better if used differently, if that makes sense. I think Thomas is like the first like true de facto deep threat go route back shoulder fade kind of guy that Trevor's had in Jacksonville. My apologies, not including Laquon Treadwell.
Well, the second in the past month, actually, since Gabe Davis is also here. I think that Brian Thomas is like a good first round receiver prospect because right away he's going to be able to take the top off of defenses and be a red zone threat. And so like he'll be able to have niche roles, but then also stay on the field because of his blocking. Like one of his biggest highlights is just like sprinting down the field against my Gators and like delivering a huge block on a big Jaden Daniels run. And so he also has enough smoothness and wiggle in his game that like he'll start out with a kind of a high floor because he can stretch the field for you and kind of open up the rest of the offense. But again, he has enough wiggle and juice and stuff that he could develop more of a route tree than he was kind of asked to run at LSU. And so generally speaking, I think it was a good pick, but I'm a little curious about the fit because like it is a good fit with Trevor Lawrence and it is a good fit playing next to Christian Kirk and even Evan Engram, but like they just got Gabe Davis. And so like, it just seems very redundant to me because they're both like, again, don't really have great route trees right now. It's pretty much just like vertical route trees.
Neither's really like a yard after catch guy either.
Yeah. And so like, again, maybe Thomas Jr. can develop into more one day, but as of week one, like they're going to have like two straight line runners and then Christian Kirk on the inside. So it's going to be pretty curious to see like if they're just going to like try to make Trevor Lawrence like prime Russell Wilson and like establish the run. Cause they have been talking a lot about the run this off season and just like go on a lot more under center play action and deep threats and like, or if it's going to be like more of a Bruce Arians shotgun vertical offense. I don't know. It's not a bad fit, just an interesting one.
Yeah. So what I would say is like I think there are definitely similarities with him and Gabe in the like short term and then like the small picture. I think big picture, I think he has more traits to his game that suggest he can develop beyond that. Like we know Gabe Davis, like he is what he is. You know, he's not going to develop beyond the type of role player he is now. I think Thomas, at least like the traits are there for him to add to his route tree and to be more than just, you know, a nine ball and a slot fade merchant, you know, the traits are there with him more so. And then there is, you know, the bit of the speed difference. I know Gabe Davis isn't slow by any means, but I do think Thomas adds a little bit of an extra gear. There are two things I was curious about. One, they mentioned Thomas like wanting his speed to open up the rest of the offense, which to me suggests you want him on the field, right?
Yes.
So what happens with Zay Jones? Do you make him the most expensive number four receiver and technically number five pass catching option in NFL history? I see both merits. Like one, on one hand, he's a good veteran to have around a young receiver and stuff. And on the other hand, if you're taking this guy with the hope that his speed opens up the offense and that you can develop more vertical passing game, like he needs to be on the field. He can't be playing like 15 snaps a game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like the Jags are just like learned their lesson of last year of kind of like adding more depth to the receiver room. I mean, it definitely wouldn't surprise me if just like any day now there was like news that broke that Zay was designated as a post June 1 release. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that it doesn't really make sense either way to like cut Zay and then you're back down to just like three startable receivers, yeah. Nothing else behind him, or you keep Zay and you just have like an incredibly expensive receiver room that's not even like a top five, maybe even top 10 receiver room in the league.
Which they can shoulder, you know, like they had the cap space to make it work. It's just like, should you do everything that you can, you know? Like, so it's an interesting question. And then my next one was, does this signal to them going with more of a vertical passing game? I feel like at times last year, they were forced to go with the horizontal passing game because they didn't trust their offensive line. But then if you peel it back, they did the same horizontal passing game in 2022 for the most part. Not to the same extent, but still it was largely their identity. They've never really been a team to push the ball downfield since Peterson's been here. Lawrence has never been in that offense in his career. Freaking CJ Stroud doing the Bleacher Report live analysis of each picks talked about them picking Thomas. I'll pull it up since he's worked out with Thomas. And I'm a CJ Stroud fan, and I love when athletes keep it, you know, pretty honest. He said, I like this pick. They needed a down the field threat vertically for Trevor Lawrence. You know, the ball gets out of his hands so fast. I think this is good for him to finally be able to hold on to it and get it down the field. So, like, even the peers are saying, like, come on, let Trevor throw more YOLO balls, right?
Yep. Let Trevor cook. It's kind of underrated that they, like, don't let him. It's more about, like, the offensive line that's, like, hindered it than anything else. Like, the Jags are asking Trevor Lawrence to throw a bunch of, like, quick passes, partly because he has the capacity, which, like, quick passes sound easy, but it's actually pretty tough to, like, be able to read even, like, a stick concept and just be able to convert that 80% success rate.
That's the thing. It feels like they have a Mustang, but they only drive it to church on Sundays. You know, like,
And the reason isn't because of the car, because of Lawrence. It's because of, like, the environment around him. And so I wonder if, like, they feel like with the investments that they made in the offensive line this offseason, aka just bringing back some guys and adding Mitch Morse, if they were like, okay, now we finally feel confident in our offensive line, so we can add some freaking juice for Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, it would be a welcome sight, because I've always wondered what Trevor Lawrence would look like in a fully unleashed offense. Because you're right, he can be like that, like, processor and that getting the ball out of his hand. Like, he's shown that he can do that, but.
Nate Tice has said this a couple times. Trevor could play in any system.
Yeah, it definitely feels like there's some untapped potential there. So, like I said, I wasn't a big Thomas guy throughout the process, but I feel like I haven't crapped on the pick once, and that's because largely the trade that they made. And then two, I'm not going to criticize them for taking a receiver when I've been saying all offseason that they need to finally put a young receiver on a cheap contract. So they did that here. It's especially with Trevor getting paid, you know, imminently. My apologies for tweeting out a Schoolboy Q song called Break the Bank also. my mentions were – I legitimately was
– I definitely saw it and, like, thought it was cute too. I should have known better, but, like
– I hate it. I got in my truck to get gas before I headed to the stadium, and I had not – that album came out in 2014. That was, like, my junior year of high school, and I hadn't heard that song since about then. So it just got me feeling nostalgic, and I was like, let me just share the people. And then I look at my notifications as I'm pumping the gas. I'm like, dear God, what have I done? Yeah, no, it's got nothing on that front. But back on topic, I think it makes sense to add a young receiver. We've been saying it makes more sense to add an outside guy as opposed to a slot guy. Like, it, in a lot of ways, he fits better than Neighbors. I'll say it. Neighbors, people discounted how much he worked out of the slot. I'll say it.
Yeah, I think Neighbors would have fit better with the 2024 Jags, but Thomas is a better, like, long-term fit with Lawrence.
That's fair. Can also say that I resent Todd McShay for that Brock Bowers stuff.
Come on, man.
95% of that tweet was wrong to begin with. Yeah. But I resent him making people take the stance that, yes, I would give up picks for a move tight end. And don't get me wrong, I think he's one of the five best players in the class. I think Brock Bowers goes Zoom. I think he's awesome. But Brian Thomas Jr. also goes Zoom. Mm-hmm. You know, so I actually, as weird of a pick as it was, for like random for the Raiders, that's such a better setup for him. Like, him and Mayer complement each other so much more than, like, him and Ingram would have. And that was, like, basically my whole point is everybody wanted to talk about the running game getting better. All right, you're investing a first-round pick in a 243-pound tight end. Like, and I refuse to think that people think that, like, his strength in the NFL at all is going to be blocking. You know, he's a move tight end. This is what it is. But I always thought it was a pretty – crazy first round, all Jaguar things expected. Like, I mocked them trading up to take a corner. I swang, missed, tossed the bat at the fence, you know, hit the priest in the head. I whiffed completely. It was unpredictable.
I wonder what would have happened though if four quarterbacks had gone in the top 12 instead of six. I mean, maybe they just take Thomas Jr. at 17. I don't know. Things could have looked differently.
I think they do. I think they take Thomas Jr. at 17, regardless how the board fell. And it just – everything was turning – what's it called? Everything's looking up Milhouse? I don't know. No. Everything's coming up Milhouse. That's what it is.
Okay.
There we go.
Sure. Yeah.
So if you had to put a grade on it, including your thoughts on the player, the process, all of that, just how Thursday looked for the Jaguars, what grade are you giving it?
I'm going to go B+. And it's like really less about the prospects because like I don't really want to grade like the prospect until I've actually watched a lot more of his film and like gone through more of his stats and stuff like that. Just until I do more homework. But in terms of the process, I think it makes a lot of sense to trade back, obviously, is a win to get more picks, but then to also start the run on receivers. And like to, I'm assuming they feel confident to be able to get a corner sometime on day two. That would be almost as effective as the one they got on day one. So I think the process was pretty good. And then the process of helping out Trevor Lawrence is always a good one. And so, yeah, I'm not going to give it an A again because it's not like I like am obsessed with Thomas as a prospect, but I think it was definitely an above average night for the Jags.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I got distracted for a second. My cat was like almost two, is just now starting to grow into his meow. And he's just,
oh no.
Yeah, going ballistic.
So. Yeah, that's the tough thing about raising pets. One day they start getting louder and you're like, where did this come from?
Yeah, it does not fit his frame. So I'm with you. I'd probably give it about a B+2 because, like I said, not crazy about the player per se, but they took him in a much more comfortable range, I think, than they originally would have. Mm-hmm. And the process, I mean, is Trent adapting? I mean, I'll just say it, man. Is it because 2021, they took a running back. I'll put that on Urban. I won't even put that on Trent's record. Urban is the one calling him a slash player, whatever the hell that was. So that's nothing against Travis Etienne, who is one of the best players on the roster. It's just it's like a simple thing in football now. Really, you know, most cases, unless it's like a top five player in the class, like a Saquon or a Bijan Robinson, you don't take a running back in the first round. So it's nothing against the player. It just kind of is what it is about the position. But 2022 traded up for a linebacker after taking a guy at one who, not to criticize the player, but I think most analytical-driven arguments were vastly going against the selection they made at one. So both that and trading up for an inside linebacker. It was a doozies in back-to-back first round. Last two drafts, he's cooked. I'll give it to him. Has he adapted?
First round. I mean, John, remember, yeah,
we do
the same podcast that we're doing right now last year, like where we just talked about Anton. I think maybe one
we
of
didn't
us
do one. I did like a 5 minute. I did like a 5 minute.
Okay, yeah.
No, you did. You did it. Yeah, you did like a 10 minute.
Either way, one of us did it. But I definitely remember that both of us came out of, and I mean, pretty much everyone too, both of us came out of the first round. We're like, oh, Trent, nice work. And then days two and three happened, especially day two. And so I'm excited for tonight, honestly.
Two things I'll give you. I agree on day two. I think that I don't fault a GM for missing as much on day three because I feel like how many GMs are good at day three is probably a very select a few and it's probably more random. But I'll give you day two. I'll give you day two. The Luke Fortner, Chad Muma pairing and the strange Bigsby pairing have not been very bearing of fruit so far. So I'll give you that. I'm not calling him Ozzie Newsome, but yeah. I do think he's handled the most important round well.
Was adjust the word that you used?
He's adjusted. Yeah.
I think he's improved.
He's grown.
You're going the wrong way. I'm trying to I think his process has been very good the past two first rounds. And so I remember last year everyone was like, oh, there's so many good defensive players still available at the top of the second. Please trade up Trent. And so I'm pretty excited to see who he ends up trading down for tonight to make
that, it probably. That's my thing. I feel like whoever it is going to surprise. You know, like I feel like I feel like nobody should be going with a chalk pick.
Don't take a corner.
I have a gut feeling. Yeah, right. I have a gut feeling 48 is going to be. Well, watch it be a linebacker. If it's a linebacker,
it's going to be a linebacker or a safety, and then he's
going to be
Cam Hart in the third round.
That'd be a great bit. God, that'd be a great bit. All right, before we go, do you have any realistic floor and ceiling comparisons for Thomas? I got one.
Ooh. Okay, you go first.
Floor, MVS.
I like that.
Ceiling, DK.
I like that too.
I think he can fall on either of those range of outcomes. I'm not going to make a guess on which one it is, but I do think he has that kind of ceiling. I mean, just that athletic profile. I mean, you said it yesterday, RAS, relative athletic score. It's definitely something you need to put more under the magnet, like look at it a little bit closer than people do, but still finishing 10th. It's still pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Those are really good comps, and they're going to be better than mine. But the two that I thought of off the top of my head were DJ Chark as a low-end comp, if he just ends up being, like, big and fast, but, like, really just throw him out at X on the sideline and just, like, ask him to win on the perimeter solely and be able to get a couple of, like, 50-50 jump balls for Trevor one or three times a game. And then I think the ceiling
– Say it.
All right. Someone said Brandon Ayuk, and I don't think that's a great
someone.
Tyson Mays both said Ayuk, and I don't think that's a great one, but I just think it's like a good different perspective to give to DK, because DK at this point is like he's evolved a little bit maybe since he came out, but like at this point he's basically still just like a really good deep threat because he's big and fast. But I think Thomas Jr. has the potential to like grow into a little bit more than that and actually like one day be able to open up his route tree a little bit more. And so, like, again, I don't think Ayuk is the greatest comp, but I think someone that's, like, actually more reliable on posts and corners and digs and comebacks and stuff that's not just, like, go to the end zone, I'll check the ball.
So,
DK's great at it, but that's basically his game.
So, Ayuk had better jumps. He's 2 inches shorter, about the same weight, same length and wingspan, but he ran a 4.5 compared to Thomas running a 4.33 at plus 2 inches and plus 4 pounds. Stylistically, I can see it. I saw the Brandon Ayuk trade tweet yesterday, and I believe I can read through that and say it came from Brent Talkie. You know, it's pretty obvious where that one.
DJ Stroud said again, like what I was trying to say about Ayuk, not a just direct their comp, but CJ Stroud said that Thomas Jr. reminds him of Chris Olave because of how smooth he is. And so that's why I think that like even if his ceiling is about the same in terms of career path for DK Metcalf, like career production even, I just think he has like, I don't know, more potential in being able to grow into like a more complete receiver than someone like DK. Or even like Martavis Bryant. And Plasko Burress are two other like common comps I've heard of. And I feel like all these guys are just like big DeSean Jacksons. But I think Thomas Jr. is probably going to end up like that, but he could end up even better as for the high end comps.
He definitely, and that's like kind of like the Gabe Davis point I was making earlier. Like he definitely has the traits to grow into more than just like a downfield guy. I definitely agree.
Low end traits or like low end comp is like just the downfield guys, and then his high end stuff should be like the Ayuks and the Olaves who can do a lot more.
The chart comp is going to be crazy because of like it's going to be out there a lot because obviously LSU is going to play a part of it, but like pros and cons are basically like exactly the same, even though I feel like they're different players to an extent, but the pros and cons are pretty similar. Like Thomas, great size, great frame, great length, great speed, great downfield threat. The cons are right now his route running and full route tree and his ability, his play strength and his ability to play through contact. And that's DJ Chark like summed up, you know. So I definitely see why people are making that comparison. I think he'll be better than DJ Chark.
I did like a DJ Chark, but I think he'll be better too.
I do too. So Gus, you got anything else for us before we get on to day two, my friend?
This offseason, the whole process felt kind of similar to offseason because the Jags wanted to keep Jawan Taylor, and then they ended up getting like priced out, and they had to replace him in the draft. And so this offseason, they thought they were going to get Calvin Ridley back. They got outpriced. They got his direct replacement in the first round. And so my question is, who is it going to be next year? Because it's probably going to be
a corner. Taylor.
Huh?
No, it's going to be a corner. Tyson Campbell.
Oh, that's a good one. I was thinking either like Walker Little and or Cam Robinson, and they're just going to take a tackle next offseason. But no, that's a better take. Tyson Campbell is just going to get They're going to get
out. Next year they take the corner that they love like a son. Like the draft day line where dude's like the quarterback, like he's the son I've always wanted. Kevin Costner, you have a son. he's going to be – next year is going to be the corner they've always wanted. That's a good take. That's the first time I've seen it laid out like that. That's golf clap. And well done, my friend.
All right, let's get out of here. We got 84 articles, right?
Well said. All right. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back probably at the conclusion of the draft, but we just figured since we had time today, we'll talk some Brian Thomas Jr. Thank you guys again, and we will be back when we are. John Shipley, Gus Logue, we have been bulky bald. We definitely got bulky bald.
Oh, yeah, big time.
We will be back.